perfect. I think that's the right, I think that's the right like tone to have for this conversation.
But Maggie, we've been internet friends for a few years now, and then I just met Ben, and this was all set up through Casey, who runs No Gallery. So
So I'm Ben. I just opened a show, When You Can No Longer Speak, Sing Me a Song, and there's also a book that goes with it. I'm really excited. I'm an artist from Tennessee. I'm 26. I am a little dehydrated today. I don't know. What is that good?
Yeah, it's intro? Great.
Okay.
That's perfect.
My name is Maggie Dunlap. I'm an artist as well. And I wrote the accompanying exhibition text for Ben's show, When You Can No Longer Speak, Sing Me a Song.
Perfect. So I wanted to just ask you guys, because I feel like both of you have kind of like similar aesthetic inclinations. I see it a lot, but I think you're sort of pulling from a deeper set of references than this kind of like reactive, I guess you could say like militarized aesthetic that you see a lot in like art and media now. And I don't know if it has to do with the fact that Trump's out of office and, you know, Biden's around. And you kind of saw, at least especially in like the Obama years, this kind of return of this, I don't know, I guess you could say almost like empty Americana pastiche, but you're like critical of it through the show also, like especially with the things that you wrote and how it's all about the sort of LARP. And I'm really interested in that too. So if you guys want to talk about military simulation, I'm really fascinated by that stuff, especially, you know, like historical war reenactment. It's a pretty interesting thing. So yeah, I mean, it's all yours.
I'm pretty sure that I know what you mean, this specific type of aesthetic that you're referring to, but I perhaps now or maybe even later on, maybe a specific reference just so that I can make sure we're all on the same page to what specifically you're referring to is. But when you talk about like empty Americana pastiche and this kind of like idea of like what you mean, like things like not like the whole like non-place, like liminal space, kind of like exporting the Midwest to New York kind of like fixation that I think a lot of people have right now. And I think that like what you're describing leads itself into LARPing and this sort of production of LARP or this kind of like reconstruction of the past or of history. That I think both comes from a place of desperation and also potentially like fetish as well. And I think there's a lot to be said about that. But that's sort of for me, kind of where the interest in some of this stuff comes from, and this idea of creating these reconstructions of a past, but running them sort of through the lens of, you know, it's more of a mythology than it is a sort of, you know, objective recording of something in the past, and that looking at it that way, I think as an artist can be productive leading into the future as far as thinking about history and thinking about this feeling of loss that I guess is maybe what you were getting at when you were sort of trying to frame this specific aesthetic historically. Am I on the money here?
Yeah,
as far as 100%. What you meant.
Yeah, okay. Definitely. I think the liminal spaces thing is, because I'm not talking about like painters like, you know, Maynard Dixon or something with these like cowboys on these plains.
Yeah.
I mean, I love all that stuff. You see, like, that's the kind of Americana that I think is interesting. But when you talk about like how liminal spaces imagery is sort of being exported out to the coast, and there is a kind of desperation there. That's really interesting. If you guys want to go deeper on that.
Well, I think Ben, I don't know what you were about to say, but I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about like when I think of these references or this aesthetic that you're speaking of, I really do think about the hero's journey in this kind of military fetishistic media. I'm thinking of like American Sniper and like other sort of patriotic hero's journey storylines. And I feel like that's a big part of this that I love when you told me about this part of the project.
Book, one of the I guess just to get more into delving into the what is specifically the aesthetic is in the book there's a section it's a photo of this guy. I'm going to try not to use names of the organizations that I worked with or the specific people just because I'm just not going to do that. But this specific person who is in this photo, and he's standing in front of an American flag that's sort of billowing behind him, and he's holding a airsoft gun, and he's wearing all this camo. And then, I have this image of him, and it's sort of paired with this tagline about it's like this very, very patriotic image that sort of recalls things like American Sniper and like this kind of hyper American patriotism, like the Q clearance super soldier kind of vibe. And yeah, it's paired with a line about the great old ones and the soft black stars and these sort of Lovecraftian references to these kind of like greater networks of control that have a sort of nebulous and unknowable quality to them that I think is something some of the things that you wrote about in your essay, Maggie, as far as thinking about political myth as through the lens of cosmic horror is maybe a productive way to begin to analyze it. And then also thinking about the LARP, specifically it being a sort of military themed LARP, a contemporary military themed LARP, being this thing that's both horrifically political and also eerily apolitical at the same time. And so I think for me, I kind of use that space of cosmic horror as a way to talk about the line between those two spaces of like something being either extreme politics or high fantasy. And I guess that is relevant as far as thinking about the way that people view America or American identity or patriotism now, because it kind of feels like people are either on the extreme right or on the extreme left or somewhere in the middle, and that's kind of an uncomfortable point of insecurity maybe for some people as far as like not being like this kind of caricature politically maybe. I mean, I could be off the money with that. Maybe that's just an insecurity that I feel personally, but I think the LARP sort of gets at that. I feel like I'm going on. I don't know.
No, that's great. It reminds me of A24's Civil War. I don't know if either of you have seen that.
I
That
loved it.
yeah, I thought that
you
was fun. I
loved
also
it.
loved it.
Whoa.
I
See,
saw
I
it twice.
hated it.
You
Really?
hated it?
It gave me the ick. I don't really know. That was my reaction. I haven't like intellectualized it much, but I did feel this like feeling of, yeah, this. I mean, but there's also something compelling when you have something that's so political, but it's also so apolitical because there's this fog of like, you can't really tell who are like the populist, what's the ideology driving the Civil War? Is it something like, historical populism or Marxism, or is it something more like, the American Revolutionary War? Like you can't really tell what's driving or motivating, what did they call the states like Florida, California, and Texas that are seceding? It's like the Western forces or something. But yeah, I think that's interesting. But also like cosmic horror, I think is an interesting framing because I think almost like cosmic horror itself can be considered a LARP
Yeah, of course.
because it's like what you're doing is you're applying a mythology to some things that don't have that there's no sort of mythopoetic content. And you can almost see a lot of that, like, I don't know, I've just been sort of picking up on this like kind of people trying to obscure the fact, mask the fact that there's like they themselves are kind of divorced from the struggle in the world. And you know, it was really weird. I started reading George Sorel recently again, who was this French syndicalist who weirdly influenced a lot of like the fascists and like anarchists and like basically everybody. You know, he's just a huge influence on everyone, and how in like the Spanish Civil War, you know, you had like the Durruti column and the Falangists, and they were fighting, but they were basically fighting over their like interpretations of this guy's reflections on violence and how violence itself became this thing, because he was all about like reclaiming the myth. Like, you have to go out there and you do it. And you even look at like Indian tribes and stuff like that. Like, a lot of these wars were fought literally just for power and prestige and for the myth itself. And it isn't this like sort of just like Western thing. I think about that a lot, and it's weird that, like, you know, it's so easy. Like, every time I go out in LA, for example, like everybody's wearing these like, you know, camo hats and this kind of it's like, it's really weird. I'm not like against it or anything, but I do think it's kind of interesting how this stuff has been kind of like just become so integrated with. Is there anything to that, or is it something that you should just demystify entirely, or you just like let people enjoy things? Like, what do you do here?
Well, I would push back and say that the people that are participating in the actual LARPs are not really people from
Oh,
the
totally.
place that you're
100%.
describing. And my interest in photographing this was to sort of frame, I guess it was more of an investigation into LARPing and this sort of myth making as an artistic process, and trying to frame that. So they became photos because that was the most effective means of framing this LARP and sort of creating this fake history, right? And then there becomes this political ramification that sort of rolled up into it, of it being depictions of the military and, you know, NATO and Russia and all of these other things. That the actual politics of that, I think I am less interested in as an artist. And that's why I used the sort of framework of cosmic horror, because I really didn't want this project to be about dissecting the nuances of there being, you know, PMC Wagner cosplay going on in rural Pennsylvania. You know,
Right.
that's interesting, but that's not, I think for me, the intrigue with creating these types of images and kind of examining this as a cultural phenomena, it goes beyond that. And I think with the LARPing specifically, I think that, like what you were describing earlier, about, or maybe I said it, I don't know, about this feeling of loss that I think people have, and this kind of like loss of the future, these things that people like Mark Fisher write about with, you know, this, like, you know, the canceled future and all these things. I think people fixate on history and dissecting history and going back into it and trying to rehash it, because in some ways it feels like it's all we're left with. So in my mind, and I guess when I initially began working on this project, I kind of saw the LARP as maybe LARPing in general as a way that maybe people were beginning to work with that productively. And I don't necessarily think that it needs to always be labeled as artwork or some type of performance art or whatever. But I think I do find that the LARP and LARPing is a pervasive phenomena culturally right now. And I think social media exacerbates that, and people's desire to project themselves as someone that they're maybe not, or maybe they are, and the sort of process of convincing this kind of is a sort of myth-making process. That's, I guess, I'm just kind of clarifying with you, as far as like the my interest in doing this is more in the realm of what I just outlined, rather than it being about, just making the edgiest thing possible
Right.
that, is like hyper political. And then, anyone that points at that, I'm like, oh, you're just being a prude. It's like, of course that's part of it. And of course, like making images that look real, that aren't real, that also are real because they're photos, is part of the interest. But the main thing, the main interest, though, kind of why is this important? For me, is sort of more about looking at LARPing and constructing personal identity and ownership over, personal identity. And that I think is a much bigger issue right now in art that I think people
Right.
are interested in talking about, and is definitely being explored, maybe even to a fault. But yeah, I hope that's some clarity.
Also, when you get into ideologies, it brings with it all of this like art historical baggage that I think people are trying to escape right now. But no, that's a really good point. And the images are really, really great. Could you run through maybe like the process of taking them, like what was it like to even get a clearance pass into a military simulation environment, and just sort of like what your basic interaction was with taking these photos?
Well, so it's not really, so I didn't really show up, but basically short answer is I just showed up. Like, it's not
Right.
really that big of a deal to go to the, it's not really, it just takes, you have to prepare for it. And it was something that I'm interested in. I mean, I'm someone who collects militaria personally. I like to collect World War II stuff. It's a personal interest as well as being something that I think I projected onto my work as well. This is something that I found out about because I've seen people doing milsim related activities growing up. Like, I saw it a couple of times. I used to, play paintball with my older brother all the time, and like I would see people doing that, and like I didn't really register it. I was just like, oh yeah, sometimes there are people out of the park that like wear medieval knights armor, or like that's just a thing people do. Or sometimes, there are people that are wearing all multicam and a bunch of plate carriers, taking it really seriously. And then during COVID, I started getting all these TikToks suggested to me that were all these videos of people doing milsim or sort of cosplay. And it would basically be these people, and they would be in, their grandmother's basement with piled carpet all around them, but they're wearing, these insanely accurate military fatigues. And that just really interested me at the time. And so I just did some research and, found a number of events and things that you can go to where there's a lot of people doing this all at once. And so I was interested in that. So I just went, and I was really nervous the first time. Yeah, I just wanted to see it and see what it was all about. Yeah, I had thought about wanting to make art about LARPing, and maybe this would be a good idea, but I definitely didn't start out with this being like, oh, this is, I'm gonna like go to this place and photograph these people, and then I'm gonna go on Contain after. You know what I mean?
Right,
Like,
yeah.
it, which I'm honored to be here, but I'm just trying to make sure that this wasn't really about me going and taking photos and, drawing that line of like, I'm here as the artist, and you guys need me to come here and create meaning for you. You know what I mean? Like, they
Right.
don't need that. Like, and it'll also, like, a lot of the people in the photos are my friends, and they came to my opening, and everyone's excited. And as far as like what it's like going and doing these things, it's very intense. They make you stay up for 40 hours in a row. You have to do all this backpacking. A lot, we lived in an abandoned hospital for a couple of days. I mean, there's just so much stuff that went into it. And just I traveled all over the country. I went to Tennessee, Indiana, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and I would just go and do these like huge events, and I photographed during the events.
So you went to multiple places. That's pretty crazy.
Oh yeah.
The
Yeah,
history
man.
of Milsim, just to think about like a parallel, because it kind of unofficially started in Japan,
Yeah.
which I think is really interesting because Japan had that disarmament clause after World War II. Like it was like Article 9, where they basically had to disband their military. So, in order to sort of reckon with the fact that the only thing that they had to flex their power was soft power stuff like semiconductors and consumer electronics and like all this kind of like technological stuff, they're basically like, well, this is our way to sort of act that out. It's a kind of like, which is kind of crazy to think about. You know, it's like, are we at that place now where we're just kind of like in this perma Cold War stasis where, you know, we have a military, but most of it is us exporting our arms and doing arms deals to other countries to basically fight all of our proxy battles. You have drone strike
Yeah.
vaporizations, and it's like there is a kind of like, you know, a lack of chivalry, I think, that you know, people like they want to be invested in, you know, like we all want to do. At least for me, it's like, you know, like we all want to go out with a bang, but the opportunities aren't really like they don't there's nothing sort of like worth doing it for. You know what I mean? Like there's no worthy cause.
Well, that's exactly the interest. And I think more so than examining it through a geopolitical lens, it becomes this sort of production of meaning for people. It's like a purpose. Or at least it was for me, because I felt whenever I would leave one of these things, I felt this, really insane euphoria that's very hard to describe. Leaving one of these things beyond just being like, okay, I just stayed up for a while and did all this stuff. It's like you feel like you have this, these days, several days where there's this kind of structure and meaning to your life, that's rooted in the sort of historical production, but again, is not a reenactment. I guess maybe we didn't talk about that yet, but that's another important distinction, is that it's not a war reenactment. So it's not a reproduction. It's
Right.
the what is it? It's the simulacra, right? Rather than a simulation, even though it calls itself a simulation, and it's something that I, to use this term totally literally, is a sort of productive exercise where there's actually something that's being created, like there's new lore being made, and everyone is sort of projecting a personal memory of violence onto this sort of group exercise that I think maybe for some people is in the vein of what you're describing as far as like being ultra political or having these geopolitical concerns. But I think it does vary as far as people's intentions in doing something like this. Like the guy in the photograph that I was describing earlier, the soft black stars photo, that guy is. He is an EMS in real life. So he does like ambulance stuff and that's his job. And when he goes to those events, that one that he that in that photo, that was the first time that I met him. And he had come to that event and brought guns, but for all the rest of the events, he just came and LARP as a medic. And he would just carry the water around and like help people. And that was his LARP that he was doing in the event. And it was just always struck me that it was like this is a thing that this person does in real life, and then also does in this sort of LARP setting. And like another example is that there's like a weirdly high number of people who do this are firefighters. Like that's something that I noticed is like almost probably I would say 30% of the people there are involved in some type of, but they're firefighters or they are EMS or whatever. And I think that kind of feeds into the kind of this kind of fixation on this kind of heroic purpose that people want to project onto the world, which is a righteous cause, but I think, yeah, like what you said at the end, like of what you were saying about producing meaning or purpose, I think that's a huge part of it as far as why someone would do this. The appeal, I guess.
I think that's really, it's so interesting to me that, you know, these people are firefighters. They're saving people's lives in real time, but it's like they still undertake these new, kind of simulated environments where like you're a medic and you're saving people, but what if I was a medic somewhere else? And it's kind of like the LARP. It just touches like, it's not this, I've been saying this for a while. Like, it's not this just like located to this internet poison kind of thing. I mean, not to say that there's not actual like boots on the ground geopolitical conflict, because obviously there is with like Russia and Ukraine. A lot of that is done on the ground. And but I do think it is, it's so crazy. And Maggie, you like summarized all of this perfectly.
Thank you.
I like how you referred to it as a total sculpture. And it kind of it reminds me a little bit of, it's so weird because I'm looking at like all this, some of like the art writers that I like Boris Groys, he wrote Total Art of Stalinism. And it's like all of this stuff is just kind of reenacting in a defanged way, because the whole purpose of art, at least the avant-garde in its, conception, was like it was about social sculpture. It was about sort of changing society. Society is basically changed by the state. It's not necessarily changed by artists. And I think artists feel extremely sort of disempowered by the fact that like the maybe the greatest artist is the guy who, is basically goes, no, we're doing socialist realism. This is Soviet state policy, and everybody else can just get fucked, and you're out of a job, and go clean toilets or something. That's the kingdom of the word. And that's what they call like the philosopher king or whatever, or political, what, it's like Plato shit. And so it is kind of weird. It's like, well, what do we even do? Is everything just this like endless LARP? I personally don't think it is. I think we live in a really exciting time where it's like we can be totally liberated, where it's like, well, every scene is bullshit. Everything's bullshit. Nothing you do really matters, so you can actually just do whatever you want. I've been thinking about it. So Maggie, I don't know if you had any input on that.
I think one of the things, I mean, there's so many, I think I touch on this in the text a bit, is that there are so many sort of entry points for this project. There are so many things that could be talked about and written about. And Ben and I had many, many conversations about all the different kind of avenues that I could pursue when speaking about it. One of which is that I think that a good antidote to what you're saying about like scenes failing us or this kind of collapsing like identity or whatever is when art is truly generous. And I think this project is in all senses. It's generous to the subject matter, it's generous to the subjects, it's generous to the audience, and that it's not pedantic at all. I think I love that Ben uses the phrase LARP in a completely like non-pejorative way. I think like to frame it as like a ready-made, he's told me once, it's his words. I'm not, I really owe anything I've written to him because he's like covered all of it in his own writing about this project. But I think it is interesting and like he said, productive to think about LARP as something beyond just either being like a cope or something to be like scoffed at or something that certain niche communities engage in, but like a new way of production or like a new form of art or ready-made or new way to construct identity. I think also even once we were speaking about it being like a new luxury commodity, which I think is interesting to think about like this sort of experience and identity building simulated experience as being the highest like form of luxury that one can consume or engage in. But as like an artist myself and writing about this, it's really fun that this is like at once productive, but also has no sort of tangible product to show for it at the end. Like I think these images being kind of like documentation of it is kind of as close to like a physical object that one ends with, except maybe the different like badges that people collect when they participate. And you can correct me if I'm wrong about that, Ben, but I think it's interesting to have something be so kind of generative and imaginative and require so much time and effort and money, and not, you don't leave with like a trophy or a portrait to like hang on your wall. It's like something that only exists in your memory. And I think that like the translation of that into a gallery space is difficult. And I think the one of the strengths of this show is that it's like Ben said, it's not presenting it as like an outsider coming in to assign meaning to this activity or this experience. And he's not like a journalist documenting it like Civil War style, but like somewhere sort of in between of this like active participant, but also artist, but also someone who's like genuinely invested in this sort of like aesthetic experience.
Well, maybe Maggie, I appreciate all the compliments. And I think that what you're saying also really lends itself to your work with the crime scene photos and kind of staging this kind of these fake crimes, and kind of the work becomes about building this kind of mythos around what happened and then presenting it. Like the work that you do is more so making it believable, and this kind of investment in things like special effects. That's really the work, like what you were saying about the Milsim, where it's really that's more the work than the actual images. Like for me, I mean, just being like a peer and also someone that I've worked with, you know, that's one of the things that I really love about your work, is I feel like you kind of investigate a lot of territory as well with the crime scene stuff and some of the other things that you've talked about as far as like your work kind of building. I hate to use the word world building.
But it is, yeah. I
Like
think
kind
when
of.
we had a conversation once, we said that, like, or you said that our overlap as artists is that we both are interested in creating a new language and then speaking from that language other than like producing like an object, or like an art and a capital A art, you know.
Like, and like some of the stuff that you were talking about earlier, Barrett, with, you know, certain writers, like that's, you know, that was a big thing. Like, you know, someone like Borges was a big influence on this, like we talked about with like the Circular Ruins, or just some of the other stories that he's written, where the story is written as a sort of, instead of writing a book, it's a review of a book that doesn't exist, and the book is separate from the actual story, even though the book that's not a real book is the story. And you know, thinking about that as a sort of mode of production, which I guess is, you know, people have been doing that for a while, and there are other artists like people like Joseph Beuys who made that kind of work as far as like creating some type of narrative or language, materially or aesthetically, that then is kind of perverted or decays over time, and that's sort of their trajectory as an artist. And yeah, the true crime scene photos, I feel like, are in a very similar conceptually. I mean, maybe you could disagree with me on this, Maggie, but I feel
No, I
like
think
as
you're
far
right.
as my intent and thinking about constructing artwork and how to make an artwork, I feel like what your work does is very similar. I like
Thank you.
conceptually.
I would agree. Yeah, I think so.
And some of the overlaps. Like, didn't you have a thing where you were like, what was the thing that you were telling me about the BTK killer?
Oh yeah, that is a crazy sort of real world application of my work that I haven't ever told this story, but I can. I can tell it
You don't
now,
have
but
to.
no,
I don't
I
want to get you
will.
in trouble, Maggie.
No, this doesn't, I was not involved in this at all. This was like a real case of the work having a life of its own in a kind of a scary way. But I illustrated an article for Playboy many years ago, an interview with the host of the last podcast on the left. And part of that article, I made portraits of certain serial killers. This is like in 2013 or something. And BTK, Dennis Rader, was one of the serial killers. And I was on the Murderabilia site Supernaut a couple years ago. And it's like an eBay for murder paraphernalia, memorabilia, etc. And I saw my drawing of BTK on the homepage, and I clicked on it, and someone had taken a screenshot of my like website in 2014, with his portrait on it, and mailed it to him in prison, and he signed and dated it, and then drew a sigil on the back that
Oh,
said
whoa.
like BTK Dunlap 2016 or something. I think I have it right here. I might be able to pull it up. But yeah, that was like that was before I was doing actually, when I found the drawing, I had been making the crime scene photos and leaking them on Reddit and 4chan and LiveLeak and whatever. So I was already very invested in true crime as like a subject matter, as like a sort of primed canvas for and a primed audience for my work. And then I just by total happenstance stumbled upon this really bizarre and frightening kind of like did not bargain for that sort of response to any of my work, like to have it be mailed to a high security prison and have a serial killer draw on it and become like an unofficial a collab with BTK.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean,
I know.
it's a lot of people out there. I mean, a lot of these serial killers are like, celebrities in their own right. They get tons of fan mail. Like, what's with that? Like, I've never personally understood that. I'm not like honestly well versed in true crime. I don't know a ton about it. I'm sort of just like total fucking neophyte when it comes to this stuff. But like, I think it's kind of like interesting how like these fandoms form around like depravity, even.
I feel like the sort of obsession with true crime, and I know there are many men who are obsessed with true crime as well, but it does feel kind of like in a less literal sort of physical implication sense, because you're not really physically being implicated by engaging with that material, but it does feel like milsim for girls, where it's like a way to sort of access this like simulated violence or danger, or martyrdom by like putting yourself in proximity with something violent. I feel like that's kind of where it comes from. I still have no idea who screenshotted my website and sent it to Dennis Rader. I asked the website, I asked Supernaut if they could give me that information, and they would not for obvious reasons, because I think it's a little sus to be sort of collecting and then disseminating
Maggie,
murderabilia.
the other thing about like what you just said as well about that's like fixation on violence is that I think for a lot of people, like there are a lot of people who listen to true crime, when they're trying to fall asleep. And like there's deep calm that I think it brings certain people. And same with writers like Lovecraft and Thomas
Totally.
Ligotti, where it brings about almost like this meditative state. It's like,
Absolutely. Yeah.
I have to shout out Max for putting me on, but like, that quote, like the violence it took to be this gentle, like some of, not to be too Tumblr-y, but this is a very Tumblr discussion, I feel like, which is a whole other layer of this, of what we're talking about as well, is this sort of like aesthetic landscape. But yeah, that's sort of like it's almost like a security blanket for people, like this fixation on violence, whether it's in the shape of Milsom or true crime or, cosmic horror, and it kind of brings about this sort of meditative state in people because I think it produces, I mean, I don't really know. I've thought about this a lot, and I don't know that I necessarily have the answer, but I feel like it maybe has something to do with some of the things that you were talking about earlier, Barrett, about like producing meaning. I guess like it feels like high, like there's stakes or something, or people who are serial killers have this, maybe they have some type of hyper meaningful life that people yearn for, or that's sort of the fixation with myth and archetype, as well as this kind of thing that drives desire or this feeling of becoming constantly, that maybe some of that type of content taps into through the lens of violence. I think The Violence and the Sacred, that book, that Girard book, talks about that a little bit, and some of the fixation I think that I had in that writing the wall text in the show about the sort of 10,000 year dark age and this kind of like desire to become a god, or whatever, this kind of transcendent kind of archaic, warrior mythos of, becoming the god on the battlefield. Like that's oddly specific, it's like seen as a sort of transcendent, meaningful trajectory for people,
This notion of being a god can also be framed from like exiting or becoming an outsider itself. Like I think about that a lot, just because I really like this essay by Deleuze called Desert Islands. And I do think that, a lot of times people kind of escape, and what they do is they try to create their own visual or cultural language. When you talk about world building is generally done as an isolatory, speculative practice. But even to do that entails you separating yourself from something so that something new can emerge. And, he says it's like a man can be a god, a woman can be a goddess. And so I kind of think it's interesting that there are so many different ways to go about this. And like, what does it even mean to struggle for something like exiting the world, like a kind of gnosis, or, further engaging with it in these, simulated experiences with others. I think about that a lot too. And like, is there's like a way to like mediate those two things?
Well, you could argue that it's not about exiting the world, though, and that this question, like the question of world building and what world building is and what world building has been used for, right? It's like something that writers do to create a sort of cohesive textual identity for something like Harry Potter that gives that work this feeling of subjectivity, right? Which I think, and maybe this is a conceptual leap, is again, like, it's about identity and this experience of the subjective, which I think I hear what you're saying, but I think that something like that can be viewed through the lens of actually more of a return rather than an exit. Whereas, maybe a lot of people may like this feeling of loss that I have kind of been talking about a little bit that I think a lot of people have, maybe this sort of desire to create sort of a new subjectivity for people. You know, and there's a lot of ways that people approach that, world building being one of them, but I feel like it can be a hopeful, productive thing. I don't think that it's necessarily just people being like, how do I just leave and do my own thing and become the isolationist, you know? But that's also because, like, I think subjectivity is great and important and something to be strived towards and is something that is possible, you know? Whereas I understand that there are people that maybe would disagree with that, but as far as art, you know, art-wise, but, you know, just giving some pushback
Yeah,
on what you
no,
said.
no, no. That's an interesting point. I think about like identity a lot. You know, there's a couple ways to sort of like parse that out. I'm a big fan of this French gonzo philosopher François Laruelle, who's basically this huge troll, but his whole thing is trying to reclaim identity through heresy. He wrote this book called Future Christ, which is this kind of like. But what you're talking about is interesting because even through exiting and world building, you're still looking at it through this process of becoming. And I don't think it's necessarily like this archaic, you know, Nietzschean vitalist way of becoming. I think that's more what I'm alluding to, is it doesn't have to be necessarily framed in a kind of, you know, antiquated version of striving to be somebody. I think there's like many different ways to go about it. And I think a lot of it just comes down to, if we're going to return to anything, I think like a moral philosophical framework is that thing. I think, like, you know, I think Kant is a great moral and aesthetic philosopher, you know, not to get too fucking pie in the sky or whatever, but, you know, there are certain like categorical universals that just kind of lend themselves to every single situation. And people say, well, you know, postmodernism liquidates all meaning. But I don't necessarily think that's true. Like, I'm pretty optimistic about things in a lot of ways. And I kind of, you know, I see it kind of in my own life. Like, I see it in really sort of basic things. Like, if somebody's in need, you have to help them. Like, it is sort of like your moral imperative to do as good as you can. 'Cause, you know, there's that whole rule, like, well, you know, 80% takes you 100% of the way. But for me, when I do that, I feel personally really shitty. And, you know, hell is a place that you make for yourself on earth. And I think, you know, I think about that a lot too. And so it on one hand, like, I see what you're saying, but on another, like, I'm kind of more in this, I guess you could say, like, optimist camp or something. Not to say you're pessimistic or something, but I think it's a little different. I'm not sure. But I also really like what Maggie said about true crime being like the female version of like military. So I think that's really interesting. I haven't thought about that.
I hadn't thought about it till just now either. And I thought, yeah, that sounds right, actually. And I'm thinking, like, when Ben was talking about becoming a god, I think that the female impulse not to like invoke a binary or anything, but I think the female impulse would
Do it,
maybe
Maggie. Invoke
be
it.
like, would maybe be more so like wanting to become a martyr or some sort of like elevated victimhood rather than. The subjectivity of like becoming a god, or like a hero on a journey. I think that what appeals to like women more, and I do know that there are some women that do milsim,
Right.
but I think that the sort of attachment to true crime that a lot of girls have is this sort of regressive desire for like power through martyrdom or like identity meaning through sort of like some sort of martyrdom or enacted violence or like the fantasy of it. Because I think Ben and I spoke about this a bit when we were talking about LARP or LARPing and its many various applications, but the desire is not to truly be overseas doing violence upon like subjugated people or something. And similarly, I don't think the women who are obsessed with true crime really want to be attacked or murdered or anything, but it is this like pure high fantasy that does like seep into the political. And I think that the I think in both cases with true crime and milsim or any sort of maybe slightly sketchy fetish sort of activities, the morality of it is something that people slip up on, or they have a hard time sort of squaring for themselves personally. And then that's kind of where this weird sort of thing happens where people really go hard defending their obsession with something like true crime, or like they really are kind of on the back foot about it, which is like not so interesting to me to like hear why people think it's actually like a good thing or actually a bad thing. I think that it's that's like the least interesting part, you know.
Yeah, my obsession is like Davy Crockett and like the Wild
Yeah.
West, and that's kind of like when I think of something like that I would like to transpose and LARP as, because obviously like I'm not necessarily interested in like recreating, you know, the cowboy, but there is some kind of like archetype there with like cowboys and Indians in the Wild West and just kind of like
Totally.
starting your own republic. Like that's like my high fantasy of, you know, like I that's like a sentiment, not necessarily like something like, you know, wearing like a 2 gallon hat and, you know, horseback riding and shit like that. But there is like some sort of sentiment there. And also like weird redemption arcs, you know, Davy Crockett's redemption arc when he, you know, was massacring Indians with Andrew Jackson and then told him and the rest of Congress when he went back east to go fuck off, and he went to Texas and, you know, befriended the Indians along the way and then fought at the Alamo. And it's like there is something about that that's just like undeniably like, how can I
Yes.
feel like Davy Crockett or something? You know, like even for me, you know, I don't think. But it's also weird too with art, because it's like, well, how do you feel like art when suprematism's already been done? You know, like this idea of like looking forward or backwards without any sort of horror and seeing kind of like all these ruins. I know me and Ben, we were talking a little bit about Kazimir Malevich earlier, but I think
Yeah.
the thing I find really interesting about suprematism, and part of my theory is like we're sort of at the 100th anniversary of the movement's end, and we're kind of like for a prime. I don't know. I can almost see it, even in Ben's stuff, like this objective, non-objective art that's not, you know, looking at things hyper specifically through a kind of partisan lens, but examining it without, you know, without hope or horror. I think that's kind of interesting, like when you could take, you know, these rendered images, and it's so much easier to replicate them now, and find a kind of objectivity within a subjective media. I think we're gonna start to see maybe more of that. And is that the new thing that we're trying to do now that every kind of like partisan position has been sort of like outsourced to this really sort of, I don't know, distant, fantastical, I think especially like very sort of discourse-based thing that doesn't really move a historical needle. Like these things just kind of move themselves, you know, it's all sort of a part of a greater plan. And I think the cloud of unknowing as a text is a really great way to explain that as well. You know, I really like some of the stuff that I read in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the the shooting an arrow of love into like a into a fog or into a cloud of unknowing or something, like as a sort of way to like enter media that you engage with or the kind of archetypes that you're compelled by. I like want to look up more Davy Crockett stuff now. I've been really into like Jesse James, but I feel like I need to like go a little deeper.
We need to get you a raccoon hat, Barrett.
That would be sick.
Another archetype I'm obsessed with is like 80s hair metal power ballad music videos, like Guns N'
Oh, for sure.
Roses. That's like another one. I'm just like completely obsessed with power ballads.
Wow, that's interesting. Because I feel like that's like, I feel like the hair metal is like an end. And then Davy Crockett is like a beginning. It's like Davy Crockett is like hopeful for the future and the manifest destiny of America. And then like the hair metal is sort of like the end of rock and roll, right? And the beginning of grunge.
That's cool.
Grunge was the first time that every single subculture in American music finally met its commodity form end. You know, so grunge was like at, like if anything, yeah, like you're 100% right. Like hair metal was sort of like the last, you know, obviously it was like a lot of artists got, you know, picked up randomly. There was no rhyme or reason. You had industry plants back then, but I also think it's kind of crazy to think that like stuff that like punk that was, you know, a reaction to hair metal, stuff like the Germs or whatever, just got repackaged and reformulated into some, you know, major label thing. And then it was kind of like, well, is just all music basically a psyop or something? And I don't think it is, but I think that like all mainstream music, especially like underground stuff, there has to be a, I think, in order to make something, because I'm not one of those people who's like, there is no underground anymore. There is no nothing. I just think it, a lot of the influence of that has to come from like an anterior position of the thing that came before it. Like, we got to look way far back into the past, like Davy Crockett or Immanuel Kant, or, you know, like a lot of art movements that people don't talk about. I think it's just all about like, what is beyond contemporary concept, like conceptualization, is the stuff that springs a new life. And it's not like an intellectual thing. It could be something as basic as like, can you read a book about Jesse James front to back and feel something from it? And I think that creates a sort of shift also in people. That's why, yeah.
I think we're seeing there is that. I think there is some of that in the world, and I would offer the example of I do think that we're seeing some revivalism going on within country music right now, and some of this
100%.
sort of American idealism that maybe you're getting at with the Davy Crockett thing, where I mean, dude, country music is back.
It
It's
rules.
never been more back.
Oh, yeah.
They've
So
had like
true.
number one songs for the first time since the 80s,
And
you
it's
know?
so
And
fucking good. I love it. I
yeah,
mean,
it's amazing. And there's new people coming out. And there's new people coming out. People like Zach Bryan and Tyler Childers and Sturgill, even though he's not really new, but you know, people like that literally paving the way for a ton of new sound in the face of this sort of like arena Nashville in 2011 kind of style country, which I'm not trying to knock on that. It's just, you know, it's a new sound. It's being, it's, and it's some of the stuff that people make now feels reactionary. Like the guy that made Richmond, North of Richmond.
but that was like that was some industry side, like conservative media, you know what I mean?
I disagree. I think that
Really?
those people hopped on it and tried to like make it their thing, but I really don't
Right.
think
That
that.
could be right. Did you hear the Jason Aldean Culture War One, try that in a small town. That
Yeah, but
song
that's like
fucking rules.
that's Jason Aldean.
That song rules though. Like,
Really?
I really.
I think the Oliver Anthony thing is amazing. I feel like,
Really? You're an Oliver
yeah.
Anthony defender? Oh man. I want to hear
Definitely.
about
You should
that.
listen to his new album. Definitely. I mean, dude, he talks about a lot of this stuff that we've been discussing, you know, this sort of feelings of loss, feelings of like loss of the future. Like it's in some ways, it's, you know, there's a lot of crossover with a lot of the discussions that I personally would think of him as being more of a leftist, even. I mean, he went on Hickok 45, like, you know, the great Eastern Tennessee gun YouTuber channel. And, you know, he's like, I only have one gun. And the gun that he had was a wood grain AK. I mean, that's the great left wing firearm, you know?